Hello and welcome to this podcast from Grant Thornton's Pensions Team. In this edition, we'll be looking specifically at some of the key actuarial and funding issues facing trustees and sponsors. To make sense of them, I'll be joined by my colleagues from the Pensions Team, Kevin Hollister and Zoe O'Donnell, both of whom are very experienced actuaries who've advised a large number of trustees and sponsors over the years. My first question, Kevin, to you is a simple one. How do you think the results from the next round of valuations are going to look?
Well, if we look back over the last three valuation cycles, so we're going back for a period of 9 years, what you're seeing over that period is funding deficits getting larger and larger and funding positions getting worse and worse. There was an initial period of time where there was somewhat of a catch-up on longevity assumptions, where these were brought into valuations and made the funding position worse. And there's been kind of a relentless fall in long-term yields over that time as well. So you've seen positions get worse and worse and worse. And I think for the next set of funding valuations at the next valuation cycle, there's going to be no upside really on that. You're going to see a lot of schemes with either similar positions despite large contributions being paid in, or funding positions getting even worse, deficits getting even larger. Again, it's largely due to falling yields over the last 3 year period. That's really been the main driver for worsening positions. And many schemes are under-hedged on this key risk. So we're likely to see instances of recovery plans becoming more stretched, longer, possibly more back-end loaded, and with more performance for the more outperformance allowed for in asset returns over that recovery period. And what you're actually starting to see is some type of gradual recognition. You're starting to see the first mentions in the press of maybe there are some schemes where the hole is just too big that they could really never dig themselves out of the position that they're in.
Right. So Zoe, what can trustees and sponsors do then? What can they be focusing on in these valuations?
I think it's really important for them to be focusing on the potential range of outcomes that are faced by DB schemes. Consideration alone of the progression of the funding level just doesn't give them enough insight into the risks that are inherent. The problem with traditional modelling has been that it's not tended to focus enough on real-world economic scenarios and the integration of the employer covenant with that. I think for most schemes, the key consideration should start with the trustees and the sponsor determining what their definition of success and failure is for the scheme. And generally for trustees, that will nearly always be when the scheme gets to a point where it doesn't rely on the employer covenant any longer, so some sort of self-sufficient or buyout status. The trickier thing is for them to determine what is deemed a failure, and that will vary widely across different schemes.
Okay.
Schemes where the employer is really cash-strapped, it could be something as simple as the current level of contributions increases by 10% within the next few years. Other schemes where they've got a sponsor who's got large pockets, it could be something completely different, for example, not reaching buyout or self-sufficiency within the next 5 years, but it will vary widely across schemes.
Right. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you've got to look at the long term, well, the short term, the medium, the long term position there, the employer to assess the covenant as well. But it really is that key definition of failure. As Zoe says, some schemes can't absorb a small increase in contributions, whereas others may be able to absorb a multiple of the current level of contributions. So it's really key in your modelling to define those success and failure outcomes. And then once you know your definition of failure, which again, as Zoe says, could be markedly different between various groups of employers, and you really need to optimise your investment and funding strategy to maximise those outcomes of success and minimise those outcomes where failure occurs.
Right.
This is really in line with the regulator's message. A lot more thought really needs to be taken on the integration of funding, investment and covenant in any modelling that's undertaken.
Right, but there are clearly things that the trustees or the sponsors can do in the area of sort of risk and cost reduction. Kev, what should they be looking at?
As you said, there are many ways that they can reduce the long-term cost and risk within the scheme. One of the key areas just now, which a lot of schemes might be considering, or it might be worthwhile for them to consider, is the possibility of some form of transfer value exercise. These can take many forms. They can be an at-retirement exercise, it can be bulk, it can offer with an enhancement or without an enhancement. But the key consideration for the scheme with these, when it comes to these exercises, is that there's the potential there for them to extinguish the liabilities of the scheme at a cost which is much lower than the cost of buying out. And that's the key consideration. A lot of the times, trustees will tend to compare the position with the current technical provisions basis and the funding level on that basis. However, it's important they consider it against the buyout position, because ultimately, extinguishing liabilities through a transfer of value and extinguishing through buying out with an insurer both achieve the same outcome, but just at very different costs.
Different costs, yeah. But I mean, is it still the case that a defined benefit pension scheme is the best solution for retirement benefits? I mean, that hasn't really changed, has it?
It's a great solution in order to build up retirement benefits. And if you look at a DB versus a DC plan, it's almost always going to be better to build up benefits within a DB plan. But when members actually come to take their benefits, sometimes the benefits from a DB plan can look very inflexible. If you take a typical incomes from a DB plan, you'll get a pension at a set level, and it'll increase for the rest of your life, maybe at retirement or some other type of increase. Really, if you look at spending patterns for those people in retirement, what you tend to see is high spending in the initial years as members want to treat themselves, and then really their spending tails off over later years as they become less active and so forth. And then as well, you've got the state pension kicking in, so you're actually getting a much lower benefit in the early years, and then a higher benefit with the state benefits included in the later years. For many members, if they really thought about it, they would like to rearrange those benefits so they got higher benefits in the early years and lower benefits in the later years, or possibly even, you know, a flat benefit throughout their retirement. If you look at death benefits as well, the ability now and quite favourable tax regimes on how you can pass on your benefits to your spouse within the DC environment or other members of your family or another beneficiary, that can be quite beneficial under a DC environment as well. But what you really have to do is get the members engaged. You have to get the members engaged on looking at another alternative solution, an alternative outcome of benefits. Without them looking at that alternative outcome, when they go to get advice, if they become engaged in the exercise at all, but if they go to get advice, any IFA is going to tell them to stick with the guaranteed benefits.
Yeah.
So it's really getting the members thinking about, well, what could be a different alternative set of benefits for me? And how could the DC transfer value provide this? And there are various ways in which you can get members engaged. You can look at tailored communications for members at different ages and with different levels of benefits. You could offer them online tools, for example, so they can actually go in there and they can look at alternative provision throughout their retirement. But it's really that key thought of, why do I want any benefits which are different to what the DB plan is offering, that is going to get them engaged in the exercise?
Right.
It's perhaps no coincidence that you'll tend to find members, schemes with members who are within the financial services industry, tend to have higher take-up rate on these sorts of exercises because they have given consideration to the alternative benefit structure than what's provided by the DB scheme.
That's perfectly logical. So, I mean, what about the annuity market then? Because I read that there is a steady number of buy-ins and buy-outs and those sorts of things going through. What's happening in that market?
Yeah, I think there always will be a steady stream of schemes who are fortunate enough to be able to reach the point where they can go to full buyout in the market. Either they'll be well funded enough that they can they have enough money within the scheme to do it, or they'll be backed by a sponsor with deep enough pockets who can fill the gap. Eventually, any sort of additional cost of going to full buyout will be outweighed by the potential risks that are inherent with continuing to run the scheme and the expenses of doing so. And ultimately, that is the long-term aim of most schemes, is to get to the point where at some point they can extinguish all the liability with an insurer.
Right.
As an alternative to the buyout market, there is the buy-in market, where it's more of an investment decision rather than a decision to extinguish the liabilities. And we've seen quite a lot of activity in this area, particularly for schemes with a significant proportion of their investment held in gilts, and they can transfer those gilts, which are a good match for the liabilities, to an annuity which is an almost perfect match to the benefits within the scheme.
Right. Kevin, that sounds very complex, but what is a typical gilt-free annuity spot look like?
It's where a scheme sells its gilts that it's currently holding as a matching asset and goes and buys annuities with the proceeds of those sale. So essentially, it trades a very good matching asset in gilts for a perfectly matching asset in annuities. And sometimes, if market conditions are right and there's the appetite there from insurers, you can actually pick up that annuity policy at a price which is lower or at or lower than the cost of funding the benefits using the yields that you get on gilts. So we saw last year, as an example, a scheme had about £40 to £50 million in gilts and traded a significant proportion of those gilts to buy an annuity policy. And there was actually a bit of a pickup for the scheme. A policy came in around £2 million below the expected cost of funding those liabilities using that gilt portfolio.
Right. What about other examples of buy-ins where that might, you know, make sense for a scheme?
Well, the enhanced annuity market has been growing over time. And typically, it could be an optimal scenario for schemes, for smaller schemes, where there's a large concentration of risk within certain members. So you may have, I don't know, 10% of the members are 40% of the liabilities, for example. Now, in those cases, if there's any health issues with those larger members, then overall, if you look at the price of the annuity contract, once those health issues are taken into consideration, then it can look quite favourable compared to what you've been funding on. Essentially, there can be some kind of pickup between the longevity assumptions that are being assumed for the scheme and the actual longevity assumptions an insurer is willing to price on once it knows that health information.
Right.
But to be honest as well, in that market, there's been other factors at play with insurers trying to be as competitive as possible to increase market share. It's no surprise as well, given that their individual annuity market for those players has probably decreased since all the pension freedoms come about. So they're trying to build their presence in the bulk annuity market, therefore there's some very competitive pricing.
And does that sort of insurance-based underwriting approach, does that have applications elsewhere, Zoe?
Yes. What we've seen recently is more schemes using this sort of approach, not to actually go to market, but just to improve the accuracy of the assumptions that are being used for the funding valuations. It gives the trustees and the sponsor a better understanding of the life expectancy within the scheme. Traditionally, schemes have used various different approaches to try and understand the longevity of the membership, from postcode analysis to occupational and regional analysis. But I think the best way to do it, if you can get information on the membership's health background, it's obviously going to give a more accurate rating than something based on postcode, etc. It's done using a similar process. A firm will write out to members and gather all the medical data the same way they would if they were going to market. But it's not actually used at the point of going to an insurer. It's just used for internal scheme purposes, basically.
And do they get good response from these kind of exercises? I mean, I guess what you're saying is there is a questionnaire there that might ask some fairly probing questions about one's health. Does that get a good take up?
I think the key to the success of the exercise is the communication. And I think as long as it's made clear to members the purpose of the exercise, the fact that it's in the interest of the scheme that the exercise is proceeding, it's so they can better fund and monitor the risks, etc., within the scheme, I think members are at that point quite willing to provide feedback. In these cases, you're never going to get 100% response, but if members feel that they're doing something which is going to potentially help something that's providing them with benefits, then you'll get a reasonable amount that are quite willing to participate.
Thank you very much, Zoe. Thank you very much, Kevin. As usual, you can find all the information you might need on this very complex subject, including a transcript of this podcast, on our webpage at www.grantthornton.co.uk/pensionsadvisory. Thank you.